By the way, why didn't anyone call this movie Jaws with Paws? All right. Without any further ado, you know what's coming. We told you it was coming. Tony, this is a big day for us. Puppy Bowl ref Dan Shagner, welcome back to the show, buddy. Oh, my God.
I'm sorry. Did you say something, Maddie? Okay. I didn't hear you. Could you repeat that? Could you repeat? I didn't hear you.
This is not a visual podcast, but I'll paint the picture for those of you at home. I don't know if any of you are golf fans, but this is the new trend now. These huge, oversized baseball hats that people are wearing. So Danny looks like as if he put a large hat on a little baby. Like, the hat is so huge for his head that it's a puppy ball hat, of course.
I'm going to grab a screenshot now.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I'll change that view. Gallery's a good view. That's a good
one. So you will be able to see this hat on our social media page by the time you listen to this, because we will put the screen grab of this giant hat on. You can never say your head got too big, Danny.
This was sent to me by a loving fan. By the way, Maddie, I'm still waiting for your puppy bowl congratulations gift. I'm sure it's in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
But it's so nice when people out there come up with creative gifts. And this is just a shout out to Puppy Bowl 20. It's our biggest year ever. I'm just going to get the plug out of the way now.
Please.
So we can stop pretending that we're not ruled by corporate America.
Right.
All right, let's just get it done.
Okay.
Puppy Bowl 20. February 11th, Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern. This podcast will probably be airing after it. So just go to Max and stream it. And thanks very much.
But we are going to put this on all our socials before this episode airs with all the proper teasing of the Puppy Bowl.
Maddie, yeah, I'm not done yet. One more.
Oh,
you know, sometimes in life we get tired, we get hungry, we get cranky. Some people in this room know what I'm saying. That's when wellness puppy treats come through.
He's got his puppy in his hand right now, everybody, with the dog a treat.
Are you hungry? Are you hungry? Yeah. That's a yes. She loves it. Eat it. She absolutely loves it. I said eat it.
Dog looks uncomfortable.
Anita, we don't do this to me. Don't. All right, let's talk about Cujo.
Magic. I mean, you and that dog clearly have a lot of magic between you. Have a magic way with animals, Dan.
Thank you, Dan, because we've gotten letters before, but I don't think that we've ever seen anything like we're going to get.
Okay.
Let's press on, guys. The mood's deflated. I mean, I've done what I've needed to do.
She did beautifully. The dog did a great job.
Exactly. Let's say one of us. I'll agree with you on one thing. One of us in the room did their part, Tony. One of us.
I understand.
What's your dog's name again? Whistle?
Homeless. Homeless is the dog's new name. No, I'm joking, of course.
Old homeless.
That's a great whiskey, by the way. Don't knock it till you've tried it. You ever had Old Homeless? Delicious.
Whistle, is that the dog's name? Is that her name?
Yeah, her screen name is Whistle. That's a little pun on me being a referee.
Sure.
We only got uncomfortable during the taping of the show when the announcer said, and the ref is blowing the whistle. But besides that, I think it was a genius, genius decision by Discovery Marketing.
Yes.
I've since changed the name. Her name is now Poppy. P-A-P-I.
Oh, adorable.
The Latino version.
Celebrating your language of Spanish that you speak so fluently.
Well said.
Gracias. Yes.
Tony could hear me doing the math. I'm like, how do I not say something offensive right now?
I was waiting for it.
Your family's from Uruguay?
Oh, here we go.
Right?
That's right, Maddie. What did you used to call me? You used to say I was what?
Nope, nothing. Don't say it.
Just remember, during those lunches, you would say I was some kind of kid.
You know what I called you? Amigo. That's what I called you. Tony, what the fuck are you doing?
Tony, fall down.
I'm looking for something.
Press the medical alert bracelet.
That's one of the beautiful things about being in a hotel. Just relax.
Every time you come on, all hell breaks loose, Danny.
Tony, can you hear me? Press the medical alert bracelet. It's around your neck.
I'm falling. I can't get up.
Just never you mind. I got to find something, but I'm doing it quietly. It's not going to interfere with the audio portion of the podcast.
Yeah, we can't hear a thing. Disgusting banging going on every 2 seconds.
Just never mind about it.
This is great. So far, this is the best. Guys, I've been doing a two-week, really four-week media tour, nonstop press stops for this show. This is the best interview I've had in 4 weeks.
Do you know,
I'm having a great time.
Between the three of us, there's literally over 100 years of professional entertainment. And when we get together, it's the worst technical disaster of all time.
Total shit show.
Come on, relax. Just stop it. You're confusing me. You're making it harder. Just please stop for a second.
Tony's let me get in this a hotel room. He looks like he's in a hostage video. Sound is terrible.
Tap right. Twice if you need help.
I've been through a lot. I have been through a lot in the last 24 hours. I need to plug my phone in. That's all that's happening.
Okay.
And I was hoping that I could get through this with you chatting away and having a repartee, because you're both radio guys. You know how to do it. Let me plug it in and you talk and it'll be over soon.
Yeah, it went smooth, buddy. Good job.
Let this be a lesson to you, Tony. It's not safe for you to leave the loft in Brooklyn. Just don't do it again.
Wasn't my idea. None of this. Okay. Just honestly, don't talk to me. Talk to each
yeah,
other.
Yeah, I will. I'll talk to
you. And Maddie. I will.
All right.
Yeah. Matt, you realize that Tony and I are neighbors now, right? Like,
well, I mean, you guys have your own little freaking friendship going on without me. You're sending me pictures of you two together, rubbing at my face.
Mm-hmm.
Hurtful.
It's nice being a fellow Brooklynite. You know, the best part about it, of course, is that it's a hop, skip, and a jump. Last time, I think you were almost replaced because there was some flood in the basement. I forget the story, but there was some sob story from Maddie's side about not being able to do it because of a flood.
It's true. And it's absolutely true.
And I happened to be with, we were this close to recording what was the name of the last week movie? That wonderful Argentinian film?
The Fault in Her Stars.
That's it.
Yep. It was Tony's choice.
No, you said Stiz. I thought you said Stiz sent you that one.
Yeah, no, it was When Evil Lurks, right? When
yes.
Oh, do your facts. Danny,
right.
Tony, whatever your name is. You're both the same now because you both live in Brooklyn and you're both friends. Tony, Danny called me on his own accord and gave me some facts about our last week's movie, which are very interesting. Danny, the aforementioned Spanish heritage you have, tell Tony what you learned.
See, Spanish does come in handy, Maddie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
See.
Keep in mind. It was very interesting because it is from Argentina and half my family's from there. So that type of that dialect and the, you know, all the, and I love when movies are, of course, stay in their native language, but then have the subtitles, especially if you know the language, because then it's interesting to see how things were translated. They called them the rotten, the guys, you know, the guy who were like full of the demon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the guy they tried to get off, you know, fell off the truck and all that, the rotten. And I thought, even watching, I'm like, that's weird, because the Spanish word they used was embichado. Embichado means full of infested with parasites or maggots or anything evil. And I thought that was more appropriate than rotten, because rotten implies something that's dead and gone. Mm. Whereas embichado, he had a living thing inside of him. And anyway, it's just, to me, it's just interesting how they sometimes do a movie a disservice with the translating. That's all.
And then the title, there was something about the title, the translation.
Yes, it was
the
movie, that one. What's the name of the movie? Evil Lurks, right?
When Evil Lurks, yes.
Yeah, but the word is acacha, which really means stalks, not lurks.
Isn't that lurking, great?
Yeah, so again, like little clues, little things that might support the story a little bit better. I actually gave it a rewatch, and wasn't as bad the second time, the second half, which I know you didn't like, Maddie.
Okay. Yeah. Yo conozco posible 50 palabras en español, sí?
Perfecto. Good. You can yo, speak to my housekeeper.
Yo tengo 4 años in, how do you say, high school?
Liceo.
Liceo.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like Tony a native.
Tony looks visibly angry right now at me.
No. I
playing solitaire.
Solamente dos años española en la escuela.
Wow.
Qué sorpresa. Qué sorpresa.
All three of us are fluent in Spanish. Mm-hmm. Is what I'm hearing.
Let's just finish the podcast in Spanish. Let's just go.
This is a true story. The guys who worked on my basement, wonderful. I mentioned him last week, May Call and his team. I came up from the basement stairs the other day and Colleen is waiting for me at the top. She goes, "You need to stop speaking Spanish to them."
Was she embarrassed?
Yes.
She's Portuguese. Did she speak Portuguese?
She was like, you're annoying them. I can tell they're putting up with you. And they're like, we win. But they're just like, he just go upstairs. Leave us alone and let us work. Trabajo.
Can you imagine? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Dan.
I was just curious how many times Maddie's in his life been told that very same thing. Like, you know, take it down a notch. You're annoying them. Are we recognizing a pattern?
Every set I've ever been on.
Can you imagine if somebody from another country came to you every 4 minutes and was like, hamburger? You're like, yes, you said hamburger. Great job.
I watch Happy Days.
American Idol.
Dan, take another screen grab quick with that dog in the background. There's a cutest. I want people to see the dog. That'll be a second screen grab we'll put up. That is the freaking cutest dog. He's right behind Dan's mic.
It's not a dog, guys. It's just the head of a dust mop that I have lying around.
That is a wicked cute dog. All right. So tonight we're doing Cujo. We're also doing our top three based on something in the movie. If you've seen it, you know we are doing top three advertisements in movies. In other words, not real. They are fictional advertisements that appear in a movie based on something that was in this movie, Cujo. So, guys, let's get right into it. We've got the expert himself, Dan Schachner, the Puppy Bowl ref, here to talk about a dog movie. I'll start off saying this. I haven't seen this movie in its entirety since I was probably 13 years old, I would think. Yeah. And I remember the other night when I sat down to watch it, I was like, oh, this is fun. Like a nice cheesy 80s horror movie, you know, won't be scared, won't be disturbed. It'll just be kind of fun. Cujo, the exact dog. This movie is intense. It was way more disturbing than I remember or thought it would be. Boy, oh boy, this packs a wallop. It's grinding when once they get in that car and that dog starts going. It's like, ooh, there's some scenes that are hard to watch. And the performance of that kid, Tony, I want to ask you about that. That's my initial gut reaction, was just how kind of shocking it was in a way for me. I was kind of sucker punched by this one.
When was the last time you saw it, Dan?
Same as a kid. I mean, it's from the early 80s. I know I saw it as a kid and I thought, I don't know. I don't think the parental themes hit us as hard. Obviously, when we're kids, you know, it's like the gripping fear of your child dying. And, you know, and in the book, the kid does die. Is that a spoiler?
He does.
Is it too early for that?
No, we don't care about spoiling the book. Okay. But yeah, I read the same. I didn't read the book, but I read the same thing.
Wow. Wow.
So
that's intense. And his performance is. All right. So, well, let's back up. We'll get to that.
Yeah, he's good.
But Dan, you mentioned something that is kind of surprising to me. I didn't remember any of the, of course, I was a kid when I saw it. The infidelity thing, the whole.
No, it goes right over our head. Just like the pot smoking in The Poltergeist, right? Like the fact that they're smoking pot in their bedroom. It's little things that we watch as kids and we're like, all right, we're really there for like the gore and the horror and the action and the, you know, the parental stuff is just filler. But obviously as adults, we have the different filter, don't we? And yeah, the infidelity was an odd story because I felt like it could have been resolved more satisfactorily, but just kind of petered out, right? But maybe that's the point.
Well, it abruptly ends, which we will get to.
Yeah,
which I'm still kind of grappling with. I'm not sure.
In a freeze frame, literally in a freeze frame, right?
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it's such an abrupt ending.
Of the many 1980s TV movie of the night moves they actually did make in this.
Yeah,
I mean that ending was like right out of a Donald Belisarius, you know.
Honest to God, it was the ending of a Magnum episode. It really was.
Right. It suddenly we're watching TV. Exactly, Tony. Yeah.
And there were a few moves in it like that. I thought the opening of the movie was like a Disney after school show.
Bingo! It's like Disney.
And they didn't. It wasn't clear if they knew they were kind of like doing a sucker punch or if they thought they were being kind of clever opening the movie that way, or if that's just like, well, that's the way we show animals. Mm-hmm. They're happy in the beginning and then it gets stuck. I thought it was an inauspicious introduction to the character of Cujo, frankly, is we get to see how he gets rabid, because the whole thing is about basically just a rabid dog. A junkyard dog goes rabid and terrorizes this woman who's trapped in her car outside the place with her kid. So how he gets rabies is I think, probably the least interesting way they could have told his story. I just felt they kind of failed Cujo in the beginning of the movie. Mm-hmm. I didn't really think they made a great case for him as a character. Let's, for instance, refer back to our favorite movie, Monkey Shines.
Yes.
And the character of Ella, mm-hmm. who's really, really strongly, drawn, I think. I felt a little bit that they misstepped with the beginning of the movie with the Cujo character.
I will say this, though, on that, as far as the animal performances, Monkey Shines has it all over this movie. But with the human performances in that car, there's nothing in Monkey Shine that's close to this performance, I don't think. I don't remember. I mean, that boy, I don't know. Again, I don't know what they did to him. Probably illegal, whatever they did to him. But it's a tough watch once they get in that car.
Absolutely. That's the same kid from Who's the Boss, isn't it?
Yes, yes.
Isn't it Alyssa Milano's younger brother in Who's the Boss?
I just think that every kid in a movie from there is Kirk Cameron in that period. So I assume they were all Kirk.
Gosh, yeah. The beginning was very Disney. That kind of made me laugh. And I was like, well, they're trying to... Well, that beginning was almost exactly what I felt like the whole movie was going to be.
Yeah.
And then, so it goes from there. We know the dog's rabid, obviously. And rabid. The bats were scary. Actually, that was their little teeth are gross. they did a good job of capturing those evil bats. But then we get the whole kind of home life of Dee Wallace, her husband, and her child. The child, and this is going to bring up a controversy for tonight, because some people believe, Tony, you had apologized online when we were planning this movie. You said, sorry, it's not a paranormal movie, Danny, but it is an animal movie. And I said, well, hold on. Right.
Pump the brakes.
Are there paranormal aspects to this movie? And Danny, what say you?
I've been waiting for this moment. I felt like I was caught in between, like a child about, to be a kid of divorced parents, needing to choose. I loved you both, still do. Really couldn't make a decision. So I'm going to maybe play both sides of this and remain neutral. I am trying to not... Maddie, Tony and I are neighbors now.
We're practicing civility, and I think when you're close, when you're neighbors, you need to practice it harder. In other words, I feel similarly. I don't have a problem in answering this from my heart. So if Dan, you're harboring feelings that you don't want to express now, maybe you'll soften through the show and feel that you can really, really speak your truth.
I have a case for it being paranormal. A pretty strong one. Yeah.
I do too. You can't convince me that they weren't trying to allude to paranormal in this movie.
Tony, hear me out, buddy. It's not. And I see the other side. And by the way, if you were to Google it, which is the first thing me and Maddie did, you'll see it say like, no, it's even King himself is like, nah, didn't make it supernatural. I was high on cocaine and drugs. I didn't know what I was doing. Right. And he just wrote it and it's just a horror film. Right. Yeah.
Right.
But there is a case, I think.
Okay. Well, I heard more that there was a case if you read the book that they lean a little bit more into things that could be a little more supernatural. I think involving the thing in the closet that the kid's afraid of.
Yeah.
In this movie, that's in here, but they really kind of double down on it for the most part, just being his nightmares and being, not really of supernatural origin. Maddie, you're shaking your head.
I just
want things to be true.
No, I think the filmmakers, I disagree. I think the filmmakers wanted us to have a feeling of paranormal. There might be something else going on here. I'm not saying it was that the dog didn't have rabies. The dog did. But the kid almost describes what the dog ends up looking like. And then he even has a sound for the creature that was in his closet. And the parents are saying, this is all make-believe. They know. We're adults. But the way they shoot the dog through the fog, the things the dog does where it's almost like super strong or it's like bashing its head into the car, the way they shoot certain elements of the dog, I think they wanted us to at least have the thought in our head that there could be something at play here that's evil, that this family's caught up in this evil and that the dog might be part of it. They might have been predestined to end up where they ended up, including her affair and all that. And I'll even say this, what drives the husband finally to leave his job? A nightmare, a almost nighttime vision he has. He sits up like he's almost seeing what happened to them and then rushes home. So I don't buy that this movie doesn't have any paranormal aspects. I think the filmmakers wanted to tease us with the possibility that there's evil things at play, including maybe the fact that the dog got bitten by the bats. Those look like f-ing evil bats to me.
You've made an excellent yet mediocre case for this. And I
Your Honor,
I applaud your effort. Yeah.
If I may approach the bench.
Please.
Yeah, I have one more thing to add to my colleague's testimony.
Parents, your parents.
My parents' testimony. Well, you know, I'm no dog expert, okay? But I am here as a representative of the dog world because, you know, dog theme movies. So I have to have some authority or some knowledge, tiny bit in these 13 years. Rabies, yes, it can make a dog aggressive. But over half the time, that's not what happens. The symptoms of rabies are lethargy, vomiting, diarrhea, nausea, but it's more the opposite. Yes, sometimes they do exhibit extremely aggressive behavior, but not to that superhuman, super dog level that Maddie was describing. Yeah.
And I just want to interject by saying how much better this movie really could have been if you think about it. Rabies, if it had just been about a dog with diarrhea, how much more powerful the film could have been if they'd been true to the science of this. Poop would have been would have been a big hit. They would have made more money with this for sure.
No, listen, and I wish that they had explored this more in the movie itself, what we're discussing even, like they had spread it out more. The bats, like Maddie said, feel evil. The kid, the closet, there's some theories I read online about it could be possessed by Frank Dodd, which is the character from, you know, the Castle Rock town who was,
You mean... sometimes dad is bad.
Yes. Well, and further in Pet Sematary, the book, not the movie, but in Pet Sematary, the old man refers to a rabid dog who was buried.
That's
and,
you know, right.
There's some theories that he's right. buried in Pet Sematary.
See, Tony.
But here's my final argument, Your Honor. Let's take three steps back and look at Cujo the dog himself. What kind of dog is he? Anybody remember the species?
Saint Bernard.
That's right, Matthew. Saint Bernard. Anybody know? What's the first word of, it's Saint, isn't it? He's based on Saint Bernard, who was the patron saint of the Alps. And I did a deep dive on Saint Bernard's yesterday and how they got their name. They were bred and lived in monasteries in Switzerland in the late 1600s, early 1700s. They were said to have superhuman ability to rescue, sniff out, save people. They are known for, of course, the barrel across the chest with the brandy, right? But they were always considered a holy dog. And while holy doesn't necessarily mean paranormal, there's still a spiritual element to it that I'd like you to consider.
I am so proud of you, son. You're just like your old man.
I think all the things you're both saying make sense, you know, but I don't think any of them are actually things that point to the movie being paranormal. I think they're spices that the filmmakers are using to create mood and tension and poetry around something that you see in a lot of movies. I mean, by your definition, Jaws would almost be supernatural.
Yeah, dude, this thing.
No,
I've
but
always
see,
said
here,
that.
But I know you, but you're right. You've been wrong every single time you said it. Not like sometimes you say it, you're right. No, every time you say it, you're wrong.
By the way, why didn't anyone call this movie Jaws with Paws? Right?
Oh my God.
Am I the one? Someone had to have said that at some point. I didn't see that online.
That's really.
Right?
Now I forgive you, and you're right about everything else.
Yeah,
that's so good.
By the way, did you not see Jaws 3 in 3D? That shark follows them supernaturally to the Bahamas or wherever the hell.
But I mean, you know, I mean, at day's end, does not Stephen King's, the writer of the original and the one of the screenwriters, is his word not enough for you?
That's no, right. It's not because I didn't read the book. I have no interest in ever reading the book of Cujo. And so I'm going by
Maddie, just tell the truth. Maddie, just tell the truth now. You can't read. Just it's a safe space.
Audiobooks are kind of like reading.
I choose not to read because I can't. No, I don't have any interest in the book. I sat down to watch a movie. I'm going to go by what was presented to me on the screen. And what was presented to me on the screen was the allure of something going on that is this family is wrapped up in that's evil. And you can't show me that level of kind of mystery with this creature attacking them and what she did leading up to that and show me a guy waking up from a dream feeling compelled to go to it and not say that there's not, they're not teasing us with something more.
Well, that's you're changing your terms now. Teasing us with something more is different than I think this is a paranormal. You can make a case for it being paranormal. Those are very different things. So are they using teasing you with a little bit of spookiness and some perhaps paranormal underpinnings? I mean, yeah, it takes place in the same town, really, that a lot of King's stuff does. So by default, I guess you could say it's supernatural just because it takes place adjacent to, you know,
Castle Rock.
Other places and characters that he did talk about that had supernatural elements to them. But I don't know. I mean, these are just like, these are like poetic allusions that people make in dramas, like people having dreams or characters appearing out of mist because it's supposed to evoke how the characters feel about it.
I just upgraded our Zoom time to make it unlimited.
Look at you, man.
You are doing well. We had a 40-minute window originally, but it's now sky's the limit. But in order to make those miracles happen, you know, Daddy's got to pay the bill. So it's time for a snack. And the snack is time for Bon Appetit meal bars. Now, if you're looking for a... Okay, I'm sorry. Let's take two. Okay, here we go.
Doc hates you.
You'll let it out the first part when things didn't go so well.
You know what you need to do is send Whistle to Tony and Amelia's on-camera acting class, Acting for Actors.
She probably could, yeah, take a few take a few tips.
She is not getting it done.
I just have to say, I'm sorry, it's not called Acting for Actors. That's not the name of the class.
You sure about that?
The only reason I'd rebut that 100% both of your statements, guys, is that, you know, she's not acting, guys. This day and age in commercial, you got to be authentic and genuine. You can't put it on. You know, people will see through that iPhone screen right away if you're not being, you know, so she really does love everything that we're selling. Here we go. Poor dog. Hey, guys, this podcast is making me kind of hungry, all the talking. And do you guys want to maybe stop for a meal break? Yeah, still a podcast, I'm, so try to say something and not just nod
always,
your head.
Always hungry, yeah. Ready for a meal.
All right, one more time. Just jump your cues, okay? Please.
All right.
For sake. Hey, guys, all this podcasting is making me hungry, huh?
Me too.
Yo deseo comer. Sí.
Good thing I've got one of these Bon Appetit meal bars. They're delicious for humans and dogs. Mmm. Well, see?
Don't eat that, please. Oh. Ugh.
It sounds delicious.
For listeners at home, she ate the whole thing. She freaking loved it.
You ate it, though. Is that really edible for a human and a dog? Or do you just need the money that bad?
Do you want the unlimited minutes or not?
Not if it keeps going like this.
You're stuck with me in my hellhole of puppy world. This has been my life for 4 weeks, and now you're in it. You're in the vortex. There's no getting out. Tony, I'd like to address one thing that, because I really did see both sides of this, and I think that if King had wanted it, I agree, to be truly supernatural, he would have initially made it so, said so. But then when they adapted it to a movie, if he wanted to dig into that, he would have. Instead, it felt like they took more steps away from it. This is a quote I read. It's not mine, but I think it's genius and beautiful and speaks to Tony's point, in particular about being the monsters in the closet, about them being an imagined fear, a false fear, something that every child has. That this is more a family film than anything. It's the examination of the death of the nuclear family. The Trentons are dysfunctional and disconnected people with an adulterous wife and a workaholic husband. Tad's monster in the closet is an imagined fear, and his father creates words, like in his job, to combat it. He doesn't explain that Tad's fears are baseless or try to reassure him. He tries to make magic. Cujo is the karma that wakes the family up to its faults in the case of the book, far too late.
Could we not consider the notion of karma paranormal? Here's the other thing. Why is she having an affair with Chuck Norris?
Yeah. And what does he do for a living?
Why is he the town stud? He looked like Chuck Norris if Chuck Norris like hadn't worked for 15 years and had a drinking problem.
That, you know, that was Dee Wallace's actual husband, right?
That was him from The Howling?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah, they were married when they did this and The Howling. I don't know if they're still married, but they were together for a while.
He looked different in The Howling.
Well, he was older in this one.
I didn't recognize him.
He
okay.
Five years older. So,
he must have died shortly after that because he...
I don't know his status. I just know that he was in these two films and they were married. But I do think that there's a lot to be said for that for that assessment, Dan.
Well, what do you think about Maddie's point about Cujo himself being the karma and therefore step into the supernatural?
Thank you, son.
The karma for their evil ways, you know, advertising and infidelity.
Here's where I come in on this. I feel that we do live in a supernatural world in reality. So then, therefore, every story has supernatural elements in it. If you want to go that way, then you could make a case for all of it having, I think here's the thing. I think if Stephen King wasn't attached to this, if this name wasn't attached, you'd never be saying this. None of you would be making a case about it. And the supposed supernatural elements would have been so just like part of, normal kind of like storytelling in horror movies that you wouldn't have noticed them or picked them out.
I think that helps make my point in a sense, because how could Stephen King write something despite what he says? Right. I mean, this whole thing is paranormal. I mean, the Beatles wrote songs and then years later you go, the civil rights movement was going on during that song. Like, look, we were just writing a song about a blackbird. And you're like, yeah, well, the whole time the civil rights movement was going on, they're like, oh, yeah, I guess we did tap into that.
Well,
like,
who Stephen are you going to believe? You or your lion ears?
I'm really sensitive about my ear size. I'm Irish. That's hurtful.
Where did that come from?
You just said I have lion
from
ears.
From centuries of discrimination. That's
yeah, that's right,
from.
Danny. My people.
Tu gente.
What's that?
One of the 50 words you don't know.
Ah.
Okay. Well, I stand corrected. I never should have allowed us to cover this movie. Oh, wait, we did cover it.
I thought you were about to concede the point.
Oh, we actually did cover it. So I guess I have nothing to apologize for. And I will not apologize for my stance on it, nor will your opinion decide whether I'm putting it on any shelves at the end of this conversation. But
you seem to be down on this movie a little bit, Tony. I'm getting a sense.
No, I don't know if I'm down on it, but I'm certainly not going to put it in a supernatural paranormal category. For me, it works. I think it works less effectively that way than it works as a straight thriller, you know? And I think the strengths of it are the nuts and bolts reality of what if you were trapped in this car and this maniac rabid dog was trying to kill you and your kid. I don't think it's enhanced or made more frightening in any way by that addition to the story. So I guess maybe it depends on our criteria for these things. Maybe if one character had just said like, that's odd, or, he never did that before, or just something to elevate the idea, I'd be more.
There was a bunch of clues. I went through them. I don't need to repeat them, but I mean, like, I just thought it was very clear that these filmmakers tried to have their cake and eat it too, at the very least, like introduce the idea of something evil going on. I read an interview with Dee Wallace. Actually, now's a good time to play my interview with Dee Wallace from a couple years ago.
Okay, well, I got a rebuttal to this thing you've got, but tell me about Dee Wallace. Tell me about your girlfriend.
Here's me a couple years ago. This is an actual interview I did with her. Here we go.
I had my cat costume, maybe one of the necklaces. I don't know. And a lot of memories.
Dee, I say this respectfully. I, on behalf of teenage boys everywhere, which I was when E.T. came out, thank you for the cat costume.
Oh, my God, I cannot tell you how much I have heard that. Oh, Miss Wallace, I had such a crush on you, and I was great. Who knew?
But I just read her in an article the other day, and she said she spoke of that idea. It was about Cujo that Dan alluded to about this family and her character, the karma resulting in them being swept up in this evil dog. And she used those words, the evil dog. Evil is a notion of paranormal, Tony.
all love to no. I, well, okay, maybe so. Maybe that's true. I don't know. That's another conversation. But I'd all love to Dee Wallace. If I'm not listening to Stephen King on this subject, I'm certainly not going to listen to Dee Wallace's opinion.
How dare you? And that,
what I'm doing is finding maybe nuances in there. Not to say that, but if the man himself is saying no, what? Who are we to argue?
We are absolutely the people to argue this.
He helped write the screenplay, right? But he didn't make the film. So the filmmakers in the studio could have, look, you've got the guy who created that world. Like, okay, that's a huge point, Tony, that I didn't know that Danny said that. That's right. In Pet Sematary, they make reference to a rabid dog. That speaks to me of world creation of this area where weird shit happens.
We talked about world creation last week. We knew how that went.
That's true.
I think you said it yourself. You said they tried to have their cake and eat it too. And that means to me, they didn't make a case for those elements that they tried to kind of put cram in there. And so therefore, because they didn't work or speak to me, it just didn't speak to me that way. But I think what I said was,
nosotros comer torta is what I said. What?
That was perfect. That was perfect. ¿Entiendes?
También. You tried to have the cake and eat it too.
Oh.
Yeah. See, when Tony makes a good point that refutes on my point, I go to Spanish. It's my defense mechanism.
And leaves me in the dust because all I know was how to say that I studied for 2 years in high school.
You know what's wicked funny is I honestly meant to say I know like 100 words and I said 50.
I believe you know.
That's probably more. You do? You think so, Dan?
I've seen him order in a Mexican restaurant and those menus are pretty big.
True Sometimes story. They're
4 or 5 pages. So yeah.
I'd say, but like, does guacamole count? Like really? Just the same taco or enchilada?
The way Maddie pronounces his Spanish. Yes, it does. I mean, have you heard it? It's mellifluous.
He puts his all into it.
Yo, bebo modelo.
See, it's music. You know, it's the language of love. How could you know?
I stand corrected. Oops, sorry.
Uh-oh.
Same rules for determining whether this was paranormal. He knows 50 words in Spanish, so he's eloquent. And they mentioned... No, they didn't mention any of these things in the movie. But anyway,
the kid describes a monster in his closet that looks exactly like the dog. He's like, it's got a mouth like this, and it's got yellow eyes, and it goes...
The dog doesn't have yellow eyes, and the dog's got
yellow mucus coming out of its eyes, or whatever the kid said.
Yeah. But maybe ultimately we have to go with what, not just because Stephen King said it, but because there's just not enough. If we were dissecting the book, I think we'd have a stronger case. The book is, you know, I know you can't read, Maddie, but like the book's got a lot more in it. You should probably download the audiobook and you'll be fine. But I just feel like they didn't go all in for the movie. So it's hard to truly make that case. Also, I don't want to piss off Tony. We're still on for dinner tonight at 9:30, right?
I'll be back in Brooklyn by 9:45.
Don't worry if you're a little late. I'll order your favorite drink and I'll sit at the bar.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Just 2 Negronis waiting for me would be fantastic. And thank you, sir.
Now I know how Dee Wallace's husband in this movie felt.
Wait, take off your shirt and then it'll be more like this guy. Could he put a shirt on once at all?
No.
Like this guy
no,
is like,
no,
no, he works. He's a woodworker, right? No, they work shirtless. There's
I guess so.
Shirtless men in this movie.
For very little reason.
Tony, do you know anything about how they got that performance in that kid? Was there any blowback on that? Like, cause that, all kidding aside, like I started this podcast by saying the moments in the car with Dee Wallace and that kid, some of them are some of the most difficult to watch, uncomfortable, real performances I've ever seen given by a kid. And of course she's Dee Wallace. She hits out of the park per usual, but was there any blowback or what did they do? Like that kid was seriously terrified, right? I mean,
no, I never heard anything about it. There are no big legends attached to this movie. As far as I know, there's no like, dirt that I could really find on it and none that I had known from before. I think the worst thing that happened was that the kid bit Dee Wallace's finger by accident during that period, that scene where she's got to
That was real. She goes, ow, like she reacts.
Yeah, she really reacts and that's in the movie.
Wow.
The biggest problem they had apparently was making it look like the St. Bernard was actually scary because he just had a blast. Apparently he wouldn't, there were five of them with different skills, I guess. And all of them had trouble not wagging their tails. Like they had to cut around them wagging their tails. And there's even shots in it where you can see them really just play wrestling. And they're not, I don't, for my money, everything that's worth it about this movie takes place in that, inside that car.
Right. Yes, I agree.
It's not even half the movie. It's like a good chunk of the film takes place in the car, but not as much as I think people remember.
Agreed.
And I don't think it ever matches what's going on in there, even in terms of the shooting and how they, you know, shot her. They used incredible zooms and close-ups and stuff. And it was Jan de Bont shot this movie, who did a lot of amazing films. He's a great DP and action director later. So you can see them really using spaghetti Western style kind of like imagery and using her in this really iconic way. And somehow that all disappears once they're not inside that car. Like everything else seems kind of a little banal to me, or a little bit like a TV movie from that period. I don't know. I was surprised. Everything in that car was like a different movie or a different director or something.
We agree on that.
Yeah.
Way definitely. More intense and yes. believable.
Yes.
And then in earlier sections where there was a lot more, discussion, just like a dive into their personal relationships and the family and their marriage in trouble and the kind of suburban drama of it all. That's a lot of the movie. And none of that, except for Dee Wallace, who I think is just great in this.
Yeah. Agreed.
You know, none of it really amounts to a hell of a lot, I don't think.
Danny, I don't want to tell your business. I did see this dog fact one time that, and can you concur or agree or disagree, that a dog's tail wagging, people mistake that for... the dog's happy, but it could also mean that the dog's like engaged in a negative way.
Yeah, it could be vigilant. You know, it could be engaged in something that I'm tracking, you know? Of course. Yeah. Like I'm focusing in on you. My dog used to know how to wag her tail on command, but now, it's all gone out the window and we can't land that big pedigree deal.
Telling you, sign up for Tony and Amelia's class. That dog will be like the Meryl Streep of puppies.
You'll take dogs at Tony in your acting class? Seriously, if a dog signed up, would you take one?
We'll even take people.
Wow. Okay. All right.
I mean, he's cast me in a couple of his movies. How good could it be?
We'll work with almost anybody.
You don't have to cast her as a dog. I mean, she's so full of, you could make her a bath.
I wouldn't dream of imposing that. It's up to her how she wants to.
If you need a tree shrub, like a tree shrub, you could dye her green and just put her in the book. Well,
In all fairness, why don't you let her speak for herself when we get together in the room? I want her to have the career she wants. You know, she should be in the kind of roles that she sees herself in.
No, you're right. So, I can't limit her.
Well, Danny's a total stage mom. Who knew?
I was just going to say, like, you know, that energy can be very impactful to a young actor. And so just give her a little space. You know, that's all I'm saying.
What's happened to me? You know, I used to.
You're under pressure, and I can see that, Dan. Obviously, but I think you carry it well for the most part. Just I can. It's sometimes the facade cracks, and I can see what's going on.
He had to get really close to Al Roker this week, in part of his press thing. So I mean, you know, you get that close to Roker, weird shit's gonna go through your mind.
Does he attract paranormal events?
Guys, can I just tell you, he is a beautiful man.
See what I'm saying, Tony?
Beautiful. First of all, he smells great. His handkerchief is beautiful, the one that he's got inside.
Well, he is always like one of the best dressed guys in TV, right? He's
on the list. When I was with him, we were missing a chew toy for the simulated puppy game that we were playing. And I said, Al, we're missing toys. Can we use your handkerchief? He declined. He goes, no. He acted like I asked him the most, like, you know, to give up his firstborn, you know.
One of the first gigs I ever did in New York City, Danny, you don't even know this, I don't think, was I did a bit for the Today Show about bro hugs. And we had to go in and audition, like, how would you do a bro hug? And everyone was doing these different versions. And I did this thing where I was like, I go for it. And I did this, like, long hug with the actor playing Al. So they hired me and I met Al in a barbershop.
Wow.
And we did the bro hug and they played it. And so he's doing this report on all kinds of different bro hugs. And then the last hug was me. And I go, here's what you do. You go with your buddies. And we just hugged and kind of just like held each other and swayed. And they played These Arms of Mine by Otis Redding. I swear to God, that's a true story. That was like my first gig in New York City. So you and I have Al Roker in common.
That's why you've been close to him. I'm like, how did he? All right. It's all coming together.
And you were with Kelly Clarkson this past week. I mean, you really ran the gamut.
And remember what I told you, Maddie, her message to you is stop calling.
Call me every day.
No. Stop with the texts. Stop.
And then she said, Cujo's a paranormal movie.
Right. All right. So message received. Well, I'll tell
her that. Take Keto Mateo.
Do you guys remember the trailer that I made last year, the movie that I showed you?
Oh, yes. Yes.
I don't know if this is an appropriate time to, I have to do another.
Save us, Dan. Yes. It's a great idea.
Okay. Based on the last one you did, I'm not sure this is such a great idea. You remember that one, Tony?
I do remember it. It was called Man's Best Friend.
Yeah, we got some complaints. I'm going to be honest.
It was called Man's Best Friend. This is my latest passion project. The movie last year didn't really take off, and so I abandoned that and decided to make a definitive 18-part documentary for PBS about the history and origins of Puppy Bowl. And this is Chapter 7. It's called The Paws in the Pigskin, and it's the story of Bomber.
As puppy football evolved through the decades, so have its star players. Its early years were marked by rough play and loose rules. But one player rose above the rest.
The player we most feared?
I mean, that's an easy one.
Bomber.
Bomber.
Oh, Bomber?
Bomber was incredible.
An athlete like that only comes around once in a lifetime.
Bomber was a 4-month-old corgi who rushed for an astounding 620 yards in Puppy Bowl 3. Scoring a record-setting 33 touchdowns, thanks in part to his unorthodox playing style.
That's how he got the name Baller.
Once he grabbed hold of that ball, he would just start dropping bombs.
Shit bombs.
Big shit bombs.
He would literally take a shit on whoever was in his way.
It was nasty.
When he ran downfield, it was like Moses parting the Red Sea.
The definition of a lethal offense.
You've heard of Third and Goal. This was Turd and Goal all day. When we return, a controversial decision by the league to mandate diapers for all players brings an end to Bomber's dominance.
Advance Word says it's the Bagger Vance of dog football movies.
Thank you.
That's the Advance Word. The test screening's going well.
Yes. If that's a question, it is. They're going great. And so what you've heard, of course, was the snippet, and there'll be more to come. And
I assumed you had the project. Is it done, or are you still? Where I mean, this is the finished trailer, right, for the whole.
Well, this is just one part of an 18-part documentary. So
sorry, I wasn't paying attention. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay. That's okay. It's 2 minutes of each chapter is about 3 hours, and there's 18 parts to 18 times three. So it's a 24-hour. You could binge it all day.
Mm-hmm.
By the time.
Congratulations. Really from the heart. I know how hard it is to get these projects done. So
much like Bomber himself and how he valiantly played. I can't wait for you to unload this on us and drop this on us.
Yeah, when does it drop? When? Yeah.
As soon as I get the distribution rights, which I'm currently in negotiations for.
All right. Is there anything paranormal about this?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Right.
Absolutely. There is a hamster in a blimp cam above the above the field that is spooky because he's been the same hamster. We've been doing this 20 years and we've never replaced the hamster.
Oh, incredible. I didn't know they're not supposed to live that long.
No.
Right. That's creepy, Maddie.
I don't know why I'm laughing. It's not funny.
No, yeah. It's not. People described if you went into the arena after Bomber was done, people described the smell as otherworldly. So
yeah,
there's that.
You got another one here. It's another one for you to pick apart, Maddie. It sounds like you'll be able to find plenty of stuff in here to talk about.
You're damn tootin'.
Oh, that was a diss. Wow.
But no, it rolls off me like defenders rolled off boomers' paws when he does that. It makes no.
By the way, it was not easy getting those old coaches to come back.
Amazing.
To the studio for the interviews.
It's really touching. I was choked up during that whole thing. I mean, that's a tribute to a legend. Great job, Danny. No one will ever forget Boomer.
So right,
did Boomer pass?
No, Boomer's in a home now for retired dogs. And yeah.
Old time. Did you get no interviews with Boomer?
Boomer had his jaw removed because can't talk about it. It's kind of sad.
My God.
Now
I can see why you did this project.
The George Washington of dogs.
Sorry, I'm just getting choked up thinking about it.
No, I know it's
so. Anyway,
we should decide whether this is going to go on the shelf or not.
Okay. Well, I think it doesn't.
No, it doesn't. I agree with Tony. No, seriously, it doesn't. It can't. They can't. The man himself said it's not supernatural. We can't. But we can still argue it. It's fun to argue.
Okay, so are you invested in this, Maddie? Because you feel that if it's not supernatural, then there's nothing to talk about. It wouldn't get on the shelf as a technicality. And did you like the movie so much that you're just desperate to have it on the shelf? I don't know how you feel, because you came swinging very hard for how much you loved that stuff with D. Wallace in the car, and then bypassed like an hour and 15 minutes worth of scenes with like two guys in an advertising firm by the side of a highway somewhere are talking to Madison Avenue firm and being like, don't tell me what to do. This campaign was fine it's the most embarrassing adult things from the adult world that you can imagine.
How about the scene?
There's a trombone. Why is there a trombone by their bed?
I like that little touch. That was a very charactery little, I don't know why there's a trombone, but it was kind of neat. It said a lot about them.
What? What exactly did it say?
It did. It was like that. I would push back on that, because for me that was like, oh, that was a nice touch to show me, don't tell me. Like, these guys have a rapport going. They're kind of maybe in love, even. Like, for a person just to wake someone up with a trombone and ever kind of giggle like that, I like that touch. But there's a lot of horrible things. Like, there's a scene in the kitchen when the husband explains to D. Wallace his job and all his campaigns. He's done like so much expository dialogue. He's like, and then we did this campaign and we did this. It's like, do you two not live together? Did she not know this? Why are you explaining to your wife your job that you just did for the last 5 years? Like, she knows. Like, you know, I don't ever walk in and Colleen and go like, you know, I do that morning show called Heather and Maddie. And, you know, I do a Rated Perry for Paranormal.
But you do, Maddie, in fairness, you do say that every freaking
day.
That's
true. Actually, Colleen, that's a bad example, because I do remind her often of all my accomplishments.
Colleen's been texting. When does he stop when you're around? When does he stop? I'm like, I don't know, Colleen. It hasn't happened yet for me.
Look, Colleen, we both know that I'm in season 11 of The Curse of Oak Island as the host. You know what I mean? It was like that level.
Yeah.
So, no, all right. I agree with you guys, all kidding aside, that it's a lot of crap around some surprisingly intense horror in that car. Like, I was not even ready for that. Yes, I'm going to agree with you guys. It doesn't go on the shelf. There's just not enough good, but that good is really good. That's some of the best horror I've seen. Like, I found myself wanting to fast forward those scenes, like the kids sleeping in the car, just so sick and hot and choking, and her performance. That car was just so oppressive. Boy, really effective. But you're right. The rest is, well, if I may tribute to Boomer, it was shit.
Well said, Matthew.
Thank you.
I'll say, though, I mean, in its defense, I think I would watch it again, and I probably will, and I'll probably see this movie another 4 or 5 times in my life, because it doesn't, I don't know, it doesn't totally disappoint. It's still kind of a fun watch.
Agreed.
Despite a lot of it not working and a lot of it being, I mean, it's not a completely, you know, what the f- movie.
No,
but it's also, it's got elements of that in it. Most egregiously, I think, in the scenes around the ad campaign and the dad's job, and that stuff was so funny to me. That was just hysterically,
it was horrible.
Funny.
It's hilarious.
I love the names of the cereals. Do you recall?
Yeah, they're great.
It was like, first of all, it's an old white man professor who's selling kids cereal. How I don't know how that's appealing.
Yeah. And the catchphrase is nothing wrong here.
Nothing wrong here.
Who would what?
I wrote them down. One of the cereal's names is Twinkles. Second one is Cocoa Bears. And third one is Brand 16.
Right, Brand 16. I remember that. Oh. Yeah. And it's sharp from Sharp Cereals.
Sharp Cereals.
So
why was it recalled?
That was confusing. Like, were kids sick or not? Was it their imagination? And then he goes, "Oh, they're gonna fire us." But they're working on a new campaign. It was just weird, now, it was muddied and confusing.
I had to research this, but I had to really bear down. I watched this section several times and took notes because I wanted to get to the bottom of what the heck happened.
Yeah, what's going on?
So he's working on this ad campaign for the cereal, and it's the biggest cereal in the country, and the kids all love it, and it's a new thing, and everybody's excited, and it's got this ad campaign, and then suddenly, as the news reporter says, thousands of people across the country reported internal hemorrhaging after eating Sharp cereal products. The scare, however, turned out to be a false alarm, which is a line that makes no sense. It doesn't actually make any sense at all. So that was confusing. And then you have to kind of read between the lines and these phone calls that they're making between them and their general manager, and they're getting in trouble for having started this campaign, and why they're in trouble as the writers of the campaign. I don't know. Why is the cereal company in trouble? That makes sense.
Has nothing to do with kids getting sick. Their ad campaign.
Apparently there was a red dye that they used in the cereal, a food coloring that made them.
Made people think they were hemorrhaging.
Yes. When there wasn't. So it was apparently, it was a false alarm, but people literally were going to the hospital. That part wasn't the false alarm.
I see.
No one was hurt though by the cereal.
So in the movie, they explain that somebody put red dye in, like, as a joke,
you know, food coloring.
Oh, right. So the red that the factory was using was.
Yeah.
Oh,
I see. And it was a new cereal. And so when they put out that line, they, you know, all these kids started thinking they were bleeding,
which again, doesn't at all blame the advertisers.
That campaign of yours,
Tony's point is interesting because he's like, by that argument, you can argue that any movie is somewhat paranormal.
I mean, the people using symbolism or visual metaphors or anything like that, which they do in all kinds of movies, then maybe, you know, or any movie where somebody has a dream in it, there's premonitions and all kinds of dramas.
That's paranormal. That's paranormal. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't happen in every movie. I mean, you know, I saw Terms of Endearment. I didn't see any paranormal illusions in that movie. Kramer versus Kramer.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Schindler's List.
People listening, great call, by the way. Great call. Thank Perfect you. Timing on that joke. Just because I think it has to be said, if you're listening to this podcast, and that's a big if, and you want to see Cujo because this is a paranormal podcast, and he's like, oh, I love paranormal movies. And Maddie, you know, who's apparently seen Bigfoot, says this is a paranormal movie. It's not. And you're going to be disappointed, and you're going to hate our show, and you're going to be pissed off that we led you to Paranormal Town when it's not really a thing. So just, you know, before one, it's got a light coat of paint on one side of it, just like a light little brushing of potential paranormal, maybe, but it doesn't coalesce into anything that would make you feel like you had gotten your full paranormal meal, or even an appetizer for that matter. So I'm just warning you, you know, it may, sure, Maddie, it's paranormal, but listeners beware.
All I was saying was, my whole point when you said, oh, sorry, guys, I shouldn't have suggested Cujo. It's not a paranormal movie. I just said, hold on, not so fast. It may indeed have elements of the paranormal, and I think I was right.
And after your research, you were wrong.
I'll die on that slobbery saliva hill. God,
it's so hard being your guy's kid. It really is, because you argue all the time. Meals are uncomfortable. I don't know who to spend weekends with.
Mm. Come to my place. You're closer.
I think you know my house is going to be way more fun.
But the basement's flooded.
If you like going to church on the early on the mornings on Sundays, it's great. You don't have to do that when you're at my house.
Well, this really is
whenever you want.
This really is God and the devil here on each shoulder.
This is terrible.
I can't choose. I don't know how to choose.
By the way, if I may use parlance, you'll understand, Danny. My basement is now dry as a bone.
Wow.
All right. So not getting on the shelf. Let's do our top three. We've gone like 4 hours already on this stupid. Our top three tonight, Dan, you can chime in if the spirit moves you and comment on our picks. Tony, we decided to do based on this movie. As we described, there's a kind of horrible side plot about an ad campaign gone wrong. So we decided to do top three ads in films, fictional commercials in movie history. Tony, would you like to begin? Number three?
Yeah. Okay, sure. My number three is the ad from Donnie Darko, the movie Donnie Darko with Jake Gyllenhaal. This is, I think, a proper paranormal movie, unlike Cujo. It's the I'm Not Afraid Anymore ad, where somebody is undergoing kind of new therapeutic treatments to kind of get healthier, and this little kid stands up and says, "I'm not afraid anymore." And it's something I reference like almost every day.
Yeah. By the way, I got some confirmation last week. We mentioned Jake Gyllenhaal or Gyllenhaal. And I got confirmation on your thought about him, Tony, from people in the business that he's actually kind of been acting up lately.
Hmm. I've heard that he's been making some troubles.
Yeah.
Nothing like bad, but just like acting eccentric.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess
eccentric. Kind of like Dan Shatner, just eccentric. You don't know what you're going to get.
What's yours, Dan? What's your number three?
Look, I got this. Oh, I know. Never make excuses, but it's been a busy week and I just got this assignment.
Yeah.
So this is actually, of the three, this is my strongest case. I love this movie. They Live, John Carpenter. I know it doesn't, I don't know. You can say it's paranormal-ish, right?
Kind of. For me, yes. Invaders is like
totally.
Alien Invaders. That's there. 100%. Okay. Because now, after this podcast, I have to question everything. I have to question every movie.
That's why we're here. We want to confuse and make people unstable.
I love it. So the government ads, like the subliminal. I like the movie. I like the message. And I always, as a kid, it really freaked me out. But you guys remember the scene where the guy is trying on the sunglasses, of course, and every ad he sees, it's like a Caribbean ad, and then it says, obey, and the next one says, marry and have babies.
Great call.
It's sort of like a giant ad, right? And that's what came to mind, ad campaign.
Beautiful.
Great call. Love it. Love that movie. Love John Carpenter. Love paranormal stuff.
Yes. My number three is the Shamrock Corporation in the Halloween movie. Tony, I see you nodding. I'm sure it was in yours.
It's in there somewhere, man. That's a good call. That's a great one.
It annoyingly, shrilly goes through the entire movie, and then at the end, kind of spookily goes through the entire movie. It's really an effective little ditty and creepy.
And mostly that's what it is, because the ad itself is just this like 8-bit, generated like laughing pumpkin that it just flickers off the screen for 30 seconds. I mean, it's not the ad you remember. It's funny. I think people think the ad is what happens to that kid who watches the ad at the end of the movie.
Right. No, it's just this kind of
creepiest things ever in a movie ever.
By the way, that lead actor in that movie, very close to Dee Wallace's husband. They're kind of like the same guy.
Yes. Tom Atkins and him have a similar quality. Yeah.
Similar vibe. Yeah. All right, totally you're number two, Tony.
My number two, I'm going to go with RoboCop, which has several.
Nukem? Game?
Yeah, there's that. I mean, several ads in this movie, and it's kind of, I don't know, it's kind of known for them. I love the Magnavolt car theft
Revenge.
Device.
Yeah.
And my favorite, I think, has to be the Yamaha heart valves that But, I'd buy that for $1 is kind of like not an ad, but similar in the similar.
Thing.
So I think it rules. Yeah, it's great.
Something I've been doing since the 80s when there's family game nights. I'm like, we're going to play some Nukem. And no one gets it ever. But I make myself laugh.
Danny,
you're number two, Danny.
No, I fumbled the assignment, pun intended. I thought Maddie sent out a text saying, he had three topics. The other one was a sweatiest acting.
Oh, and perfect. The third, you took one of each.
Was Screaming Kids. I did one of each.
This is perfect. Brilliant. No, all right. So tell everyone. I'm sorry. All right. Little behind the scenes P4P. So I send Tony and he sends me ideas for top threes. We pick different categories, but then Tony and I focus on one category. Danny, I sent you choices and you did one of each. I love this. So what were the other two categories I sent? I forget.
It was Screaming Kids and
Screaming Kids, right?
Sweatiest Acting or Actors.
Oh, yes, yes. Based on things we saw in Cujo. All right, so do it. I love it. Do your number two, which is what, Screaming Kids?
Well, for Sweaty, all that came to mind in my, you know, quick was Predator and all the sweating that happens in Predator.
Great one.
And yeah, and I think you can certainly argue that that's paranormal in there.
That's one of the sweatiest movies ever made. You're right. That is
Jungle.
Sweaty.
It was the first thing to come to mind. And then the second thing to come to mind with the Screaming Kids, we're off the rails here, though, because we're not on the ad thing, but I feel bad. But a Screaming Kid, it's hard to top the middle kid, Robbie in Poltergeist with the tree outside his window. Yeah. The moment that Carol Ann is abducted into the ghost plane, the tree comes in, he starts screaming, you know, like it starts as a little shudder and a whine, and then it just nonstop. The amount that kid had to probably go through to get that scene done. First, it's inside his room, pulled outside, down the tree, on the outside. Pretty harrowing.
Great call. And by the way, you mentioned Predator. Two things come to mind. Number one, we lost Carl Weathers this past week, which was a huge gut punch to me and to you and to many others. But then, Danny, have you ever been friends with someone for 20 years or whatever, and then they tell you something about themselves and you're like, how the f- did I never know that? Like, all right, let's take you and I, for example. So,
are
you know, like,
tell me something.
Yeah, I am. This is all coming to a Carl Weathers point. Something you're into. So you love the Uruguayan soccer team.
See.
Okay. So let's say we've been friends for these 20 years. It's come up a billion times. And then you and I are talking, and one day I just say, oh, I didn't tell you I spent a weekend with the Uruguayan soccer team, like at their facility, and practiced with them, played with them. Would you not go, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay. So how many references, P for Peers, do I make to Rocky movies and the Rocky franchise on this show? Like every episode.
Yeah, I can say that as a listener all the time. Yeah.
He knows my obsession. I'm sending him texts going like, oh my God, Carl Weathers. I'm sending him gifts and texts. And he goes, yeah, that's like that time. I don't know if I ever told you this. I spent the weekend with him rafting in Hawaii. I'm like, what the f- are you talking about?
What?
Tony spent a time with Carl Weathers in a Adirondack raft in the caves of Hawaii. Somehow never mentioned it all these years that we've been friends.
Yeah, I thought I brought that one up. I thought I told you. I probably didn't make much of it when I told you. Maybe you weren't listening.
No. If you told me you went rapping with Apollo Creed in Hawaii, I would right on the spot.
Wow, nice.
So now we know why I never said anything. And I just like to be somebody with some prizes. What can I say?
Give me everything. Tell me what he was like. Tell me what happened. How that happened. Why did you, what occasion?
There was no occasion. I was on a vacation in Hawaii with my brother who took me out. He was going with his girlfriend at the time. No, he was married at the time. So he was going with his wife. And he invited me to come along. I was in LA. So he was like, hey, come along. We'll hang out. I was about, I guess, 17. And we went, they have these Zodiac rafts that go, you know, you get picked up and kind of go along the coast and they go inside these lava tubes. And so it's a beautiful trip. It's a great afternoon. And I'd done it a couple times. And one time we went and Carl Weathers was vacationing there too. And he just signed up for the thing. So we were just on the same Zodiac, on the same tour for the day.
I thought this is some sort of like, you know, Hollywood Arkin thing.
No, it was totally just a happenstance.
And he was there. It could have happened to me.
Totally. It was, we just happened to be on the same tour that day. We didn't become besties or anything, but he did impress me. He did not disappoint. He's extremely statuesque, the best shape of any guy you've ever seen. Just like
ever.
Incredible.
Yeah, just ripped.
And really nice, just a nice guy. I just remember him being, having a great time. And he wasn't like super macho. I mean, he was, but he was kind of like, I don't think he was totally comfortable in the going into the cave or being on the Zodiac. And we asked him, I remember my brother and I were talking to him for a moment and said, like, did you go on one of the helicopter tours? And he was like, no way, man. I didn't do that.
Huh.
And we had just done it. And we said, really, why not? He goes, I don't do helicopters. He goes, really, why? He goes, cause they fall. They don't glide.
He's right.
And so he was very just kind of open, just like a regular guy. You know, he didn't have any airs about being tougher than anybody, even though he clearly was. Yeah. So that it was just like a crazy little afternoon. I honestly didn't tell you on purpose because I wanted to wait for the right moment, and I felt like this was the right moment.
Oh my God!
Wow.
He's 1 degree of separation away from Sly himself, and now he's even closer with his. Time was a romantic weekend with Carl Weathers in Hawaii.
Yeah.
So, but he just, you know, now it's too late now. Now I can't capitalize on it.
Well,
I mean, what good is name dropping if you can't really drop it on a show, for instance, where a lot of people can hear about it?
Right. True. That's true.
Tony, how old were you when you met Carl Weathers?
I don't know, 16, 17, something like that.
And did you tell him, did you recognize him right away? And did you, you know, were you like, oh, Mr. Weathers?
Big fan. Yeah. Like, yeah. I was wondering.
What was the initial moment like? I'm curious.
No, I didn't do any, I didn't do that. I didn't say I was a big fan.
How dare you?
You know,
that's disappointing.
No, I've hung around actors. I know what they like. I don't like that. That's not like, you know, they don't want, they're on vacation. They don't need some pipsqueak coming up and talking about the biz.
That would not be my reaction to him.
I was like, hey, why don't you tie down your gear? It's going to, you know.
Wait, okay, hang on.
Do this. You're on a raft. Like he's making everybody's kind of endangered by your.
I just want to stop. Sorry, I apologize. Maybe it was the Zoom connection, but you met Apollo Creed in Hawaii at 16, presumably after you'd seen those movies and he was in it. And the first words you say to him is, hey, why don't you tie down your gear?
Ah, well, we're all in the same boat. Everybody's got to do. Their share on a boat. I felt like, you know, he's not paying attention. He's not listening.
You, sir, has balls of the dead.
He was a great guy, but he just didn't have his shit together. And I was like, if I didn't say on my stuff that could affect him, I wanted everybody to be, you know, safe
Dan,
on the boat.
This is how it would have went if I was on that boat. Dan, you be Apollo, okay? And just be like, hey, how you doing, kid? Right? And I'll be me.
Okay.
All right. This is how it would have gone in 1984 if I was on that boat with Apollo Creed.
Aloha. How you doing, kid?
Okay, Carl, I have like 4 scenes to choose from that we are going to reenact. You can choose Rocky 2, or you can choose 3, 4, your choice. We're going to do this for the next 2 hours. Something like that.
You'd wait until the raft was already in the water before asking that, though, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you'd be at the pier.
Yeah, good call. I would have waited till he had nowhere to go.
Right.
Yeah.
And then have him cornered and have him reenact. You know what I might have done is gone like, you son of a bitch, and done the handshake with him like Arnold did in Predator.
Yeah, I heard he loved that.
Wow. Hey, well, why don't you tie down your gear?
Why don't you tie down your gear? Wow. I'm sure. No wonder it was such a magical.
Maddie, I don't know working with Tony every week. Is he this tough all the time?
Yes.
Wow, hey, quit your showboating and tie down your gear.
He's like, hello, young man. And Tony's like, Cujo's no f***ing paranormal movie.
Just so you know.
Hour 3 now. Where were we? You did RoboCop. That was your 2, right? All right. So my number 2 is Starship Troopers, the mobile infantry unit ad, the recruiting ad for people to join the mobile infantry unit. It's hilarious. It's completely campy, over the top, exactly like the movie itself. It's just perfect.
Great choice. Love it. Thank you. Also, Verhoeven, who did, the RoboCop movie. So
yes.
He's very good at those ads.
Oh, there you go. Oh, wow. Ads within the movies. Good. Your number 1, Tony.
My number 1 with a bullet is from one of my favorite movies called Putney Swope, from my dear friend and departed friend, Robert Downey Sr. It's one of his early crazy 60s avant-garde counterculture masterpieces that's offensive to everybody and fantastic. And in it, a new ad executive helms an advertising agency and kind of takes it over and creates a lot of really crazy counterculture advertising. And the ads in this are just hysterical. My favorite being Face Off, which is an acne medication. And there's a great song about it. So yeah, there's some great stuff in that.
Awesome. And my number one, he was just mentioned by me, coincidentally, total coincidence, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Total Recall, the recall ad in Total Recall. You know, he goes on a little thing where he's like, feeling too old, but want to climb the mountains. Do it. That guy is so good at that. It's a great, creepy, atmospheric ad. That whole movie is like that. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Honorable mention. I just have one, and it's actually not in it because it's technicality. The commercial was actually a teaser for a movie, and I don't think it was in the movie, but there's a great teaser for Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind with the great and now newly departed Tom Wilkinson.
Carl Weathers. Oh.
Tom Wilkinson. Great actor.
Yes, he was great.
In Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Yes. And he does an ad for Lacuna Incorporated for that procedure that they go through. It's really fantastic.
Dan, did I ever tell you when I was hot air ballooning with Tom Wilkinson?
And that's right. And you told me that he was not prepared for the balloon ride. And the first thing you said was, tie down your gear, old man.
Yeah,
and
I saw him and I was like, hey, put your bags in the thing. That's what I said. I had some honorable mentions, guys, that are not. So all three of mine were paranormal, which I rarely do. I couldn't believe I was able to. So all my honorable mentions are non-paranormal division commercials and movies. There's outtakes of the commercials they did in Talladega Nights where they're laughing. Where Ricky Bobby's two camera doing like, you know, this, and it's you watch it's, those, you'll be crying laughing.
That's gold. Yeah.
Soul Glow.
How could we forget?
There's a really funny ad for Globo Gym in Dodgeball with Ben Stiller. And he's like, look, here at Globo Gym, we know that fatness is a genetic disorder. You know, just offensive, funny. So those three came to mind.
All good,
all worthy, all more paranormal than this movie.
I've got some editing to do, my friends.
Sorry,
Danny. No, this is so good. Thank you so much. The Puppy Bowl has been just an incredible cultural phenomenon in this country. It's incredible. All kidding aside, that you've been doing it for 13 years. Kudos to you. It's an incredible.
Kudos to you, sir. Kudos.
We are so proud of you, buddy. Appreciate all your work and congratulations. That's all I can say. Congratulations.
Right back at you both. Tony and Maddie, you know I'm a fan. I listen to the show. I'm usually asleep by the time you get to the three categories at the end. So because I do listen to it before bed, which is why I was not prepared for my three categories. However, I do watch nearly all the movies you guys recommend. So
awesome.
Thank you for making my life, just a lot better. So love you guys.
Hey, thank you, Daniel. It's always great to have you on the show. Always.
Love you. We'll be back next week with a new episode. I don't know what it's going to be, but we'll decide then. Thanks again, Dan. Amazing.
All right. I'll see you in acting class with my dog.
Gotcha. Anytime. Doors open.
Acting for actors, yes. And what's your name? Dan. Dan, I can't wait to see that 18-part documentary on Boomer.
Yeah. Wait for the next chapter. It'll blow your mind. Literally. It's about a dog, a psychic dog that can, anyway, you'll just have to tune in.
Wow. Yeah. All right. That's paranormal.
Scanners, the pooching.
There you go. So that'll be the paranormal dog movie we should have done.
Yes.
Too soon.
We hope you've enjoyed this edition of Rated P for Paranormal. Please rate, review, and share. It really does make a difference. For more information, to participate, and even donate, go to our main page, anchor.fm/ratedparanormal. On social media, we're at Rated Paranormal. All music is by Andrew Galdens Jr. You can find him on Instagram at Kid Riga, or go to therocketscience.bandcamp.com. This podcast was created, written, produced, and edited by Maddie Blake and Anthony Arkin.
Your language of Spanish that you speak so fluently.
Well said.
All this podcasting is making me hungry, huh?
Me too. just have to say, I'm sorry, it's not called Acting for Actors. It's not the name of the class.
You sure about that?